This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Right now, we're outside of Letts, Iowa, and we're standing outside a building that's built into the side of a hill. Sticking off one side of the building are a whole bunch of screened-in areas, aviaries. We are at the Iowa Parrot Rescue, and I'm with the executive director and founder of the Iowa Parrot Rescue, Mike Hutchison. And Mike, will you show us around a little bit?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
All right, and we are standing now in the indoor room, which is full of big cages and also full of structures the birds can climb on.
Well, the birds have to have what we call enrichment. They have to have things to do. Parrots have about the intellectual level of a human three-year-old, and if they don't have a lot of things to keep them busy and entertained and active, they get bored. And they become destructive or psychotic and or depressed. So we have to give them lots of stuff to play on, to play with, to look at, and that's what we do.
And we've got a cockatoo over here greeting us. Who is this?
Yeah, that's Tegan. Tegan is a Triton cockatoo, and he's our official greeter. He's very friendly, very extroverted, and pretty naughty. Hello, Tegan.
Hi. Hi, Tegan.
He said hi, Tegan.
So some of the birds are out on top of their cages or climbing around on structures. Tegan, for example, is inside a cage. So how do you decide who has to be inside a cage and who gets to have the freedom?
Well, we've actually got basically three levels, I suppose kind of like a penitentiary. The guys who are on lockdown, like Tegan, Tegan can only be out when I'm here by myself because he's not trustworthy. He will bite badly. And he thinks it's funny, too. Then we have birds who can be out all day and are able to play either on their play structure or on top of their cage because they usually are well-behaved. And then we have some birds who are never caged. About 20 of our birds who are never in a cage at all because I can trust them not to attack people, not to attack each other, and more or less not to go wandering.
Well, let's walk around a little bit more and tell us what we're seeing.
Well, the section that we're in right now are all Amazon parrots, and this particular aisle of the building, all of them are wild-caught birds. They have all been imported, and nearly all of the Amazons in this section are unhandleable. These are not pets or companions. They're not tame. They don't want to be touched. They don't want to be petted or played with. And what we try to do with birds of that type is give them as much enrichment as they can, as much space as we can, and try to find them a friend, another bird. Paco and Tequila did not come in together. They were brought separately.
But they look very happy together.
They are very happy together. We do try to give birds the opportunity to pair up as much as we can. Now, we do have a few Amazons that are relatively tame. Sarah here is a 35-year-old wild-caught female Red Lord. And she was brought here because of... That's Tegan. Sarah spent her whole life living with one couple, 35 years. They're unable to keep her for medical reasons and brought her to me. She's very shy about strangers, but she likes me a lot.
Okay, things got a whole lot louder in here the second you picked Sarah up. Is this a jealousy thing?
Some of them it's a jealousy thing. Some of the macaws really don't want me touching anybody but them. Some of them it's an alarm thing. They are afraid that I'm going to hurt her. And they are warning other birds that this bird might be in danger.
And this scarlet macaw here is certainly looks like there seeking your attention.
That's one of my babies. This is Bilbo Baggins, and she is my girlfriend and my fierce protector. Are you a good girl? She doesn't let anybody get close to me. She makes sure that nobody hurts me. Yeah, you're a good girl, aren't you?
All right, Mike, you've got a guitar in your hands. Do you play for the birds very often?
Oh, every day. It's how I get my practice in, and it keeps the birds happy, although they are all critics.
But birds often really enjoy music. What do you think it does for them when you play music?
They like the sound. They like the rhythm. There's actually been scientific research done on which parrots prefer music and who has the best rhythm. The cockatoos have got better rhythm by far.
Some people claim that there's a parrot to blame, but I know it's nobody's fault.
Do they seem to like different kinds of music? Would you say that Tegan is in particular a Jimmy Buffett fan? Or?
Yeah, he is. He likes Jimmy Buffett. He likes reggae. He likes anything Caribbean, which is funny because they're not Caribbean birds. The macaws, they're all into the blues. I don't know what that's about, but. This is entirely accidental. It all began almost 20 years ago when somebody gave my wife a canary. And somebody came to dinner and saw the canary and said, "Oh, you've got a bird. Will you take mine?" And 6 months later, there were 9 parrots in the house, and we had to decide, do we stop taking birds, or do we become one of those places where, you know, the police have to come and take them away, or do we turn it into something? And we had a large house, and our children were all grown up and gone, so we went ahead and became a rescue, incorporated, got our tax-exempt status, and then somebody gave us money to build the facility, and it just keeps getting more and more intense every year.
Did you find right away that you personally just had a real connection with birds?
I think I have to say yes. It built very gradually because I had never been around parrots. We had always been dog and cat people. I grew up around horses, but parrots were, you know, Treasure Island, right? Pirate movies. But the personality, the kind of connection that they can make with you, the bond that a parrot can grow, is just, it's different than what any other companion animal does. And I know some of the other, you know, the dog and cat people are going to object, but there's really a more intense personal connection that you can make with a parrot. And perhaps it has something to do with the fact that they can talk, but it also just has to do with the ones who like people like them in much the same way that people like each other. When a parrot says, "I love you," they know what they're saying and they mean it. And that's a different thing.
A lot of the birds that you have in there, if they were to be sold at a pet store or something like that, they would cost thousands of dollars. But you have a building full of birds that people couldn't take care of, couldn't keep, didn't want in their homes anymore. So what's the issue? Why are there so many parrots that need your help?
There are a huge variety of reasons why birds come here. Some of them come because people didn't understand what they were getting into. Parrots can be really difficult, a lot of challenge to take care of. But the biggest single reason why birds come here is because of people's lives changing. Parrots can live 60, 70, 80 years, and people get old. What do you do with your parrot when you have to go into a nursing home? What do you do with grandma's parrot when she dies? And so they come here. Then we get birds from drug busts, hoarder seizures, smuggling arrests. All of the reasons that anybody gives an animal up, multiplied by the fact that they live so long and are more demanding.
These are very social creatures, too. And obviously, many of them are bonded with you, with humans. But it's interesting to see them interact with each other. And they obviously enjoy that very much. And I would guess probably that is necessary for their happiness and health in some ways. Do you think it's a problem that most of us would just get one bird to try to keep as a pet?
We typically don't want to place a bird as an only. If somebody is adopting a bird from us and don't have another bird, I want them to look for another bird that they can bring into their home. The birds don't have to be friends. They don't have to be cage mates or buddies or playmates. But a bird needs a flock. They need to be able to look around and see other birds. The best illustration of that I can think of is an episode of the old TV show, The Twilight Zone. There was an episode where a guy wakes up in the morning and walks out his door and discovers that he's the only human left. And he doesn't know where everybody went. And that's the terrifying part. Why am I alone? What happened? A bird without a flock doesn't necessarily feel the fear of a specific thing. But they know they're not supposed to be alone. They know that there should be a flock there and there's not. And that's frightening to them.
You and I visited on the show, about 3 or 4 years ago now. And at that point, I think you had more than 100 birds. So your population is decreasing a little bit. What's your goal?
In the best of all possible worlds, I think my goal would be the same as a juvenile probation officer, which would be to be unemployed. We were badly overcrowded when you and I visited, largely because of the recession that was going on. We are doing everything we can to reduce population now because overcrowding is bad for the birds in a lot of different ways. I would like to get our population down under 50. That's the number that I built this place for. Beyond that, if we can find homes for every bird, if this building were empty, I would be ecstatic.
Thinking back over the 20 years you've spent with birds, is there one bird that you feel impacted you the most?
Well, that would be the very first parrot that we ever had. His name was Beaker. He was a cherry head conure, and he came to us from Iowa City. And Beaker wanted to live on me 24/7. He wanted to live inside my shirt, on my shoulder, under my neck. Beaker would sit with me in the morning when I got up and was having my coffee. And at exactly 7 o'clock, he would hear the theme music come on for the National Public Radio News. And he knew that that meant that I had to go to work. And Beaker would say, oh, time to go home. Beaker has to go to home. Bear has to go to work. And he would fly home to his cage and go inside and pull the door shut. And I'd go to the closet and get my jacket. And he'd say, goodbye, be a good bird. He was my familiar. He was my buddy. He was my playmate. He told me that I was taking good care of him. He told me that he liked what I was doing. He told me that I knew how to do the right thing for him. And when he passed away, I cried for months.
You ideally would like to find placements for all of these birds, but from talking with you, it doesn't sound like you would recommend people adopt birds as pets. So there's kind of a contradiction there, isn't there?
It's really, really a bad contradiction. The reality is that these birds are here. They are in captivity. Some of them want to be with people. Some of them don't. None of them can be returned to the rainforest. They would die. I can spend all the time and all the money and all the resources I've got available doing the best that I can to give them the best life that I can, and I'm not even giving them 10% of what they would have if they were where they belonged, in the rainforest. They can't fly free. They can't eat natural foods. They can't find a mate and reproduce. They can't sleep in the jungle in the rain. I can't give them that. Nobody can give them that. A zoo can't give them that. A botanical garden can't give them that. I would have to have a couple of thousand acres of tropical rainforest to provide that, and I can't. So I do the best I can, and I try to find people who can do the best they can with the birds, because they can't go home.
Mike, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Emily Woodbury produced this hour, and you can find a slideshow of our visits to the Iowa Farm Sanctuary and the Iowa Parrot Rescue on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can also check out our Facebook page to see a video of Mike Hutchison playing guitar for an appreciative cockatoo. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.